Hey gang, I'm here to tell you about the AMF, the Austin Music Foundation. It's a nonprofit whose mission is to strengthen and connect Austin's music community with innovative programs that empower Austin music professionals and Austin's creative community. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to succeed in the Austin music scene. Listen, if you're new to this music scene and you want to figure out how to navigate these waters, I suggest you you call them or look them up at austinmusicfoundation.org. Let's get down. And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Aldi.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. My guest is the man, the myth, the legend, Joe King Carrasco. Joe has a new album out called Chileando, and he was in town. Actually, he was in the United States, because normally he's living in Mexico now. You can find him in Puerto Vallarta, usually jamming at his restaurant, Nacho Daddy. But yeah, he put out this album, Chileando, and he was here with his band, Joe King Carrasco y Los Side Effects, doing some touring, promoting the record. I got to sit down and talk to him. I really like this guy, man. I've known him. I've had some great run-ins with him over time. He was even in a video of mine that never came out, but we talk about it in the thing. We hung out at a pool one day. Anyway, Joe King Carrasco is a legend. This guy has been out there. He's a guy that was banned from Saturday Night Live for running into the audience. Michael Jackson sang on his records. At one point, he was kind of pointed as the president of MTV Records. Kind of picked him out to be like the MTV artist. You know, to they even had him change one of his songs, "Party Party Weekend," to "Party Party Christmas," and he sang it with all of the VJs and stuff. Anyway, look, Joe King is a great guy, man. He's a legend. He has been around for a long time, touring, doing all kinds of stuff. He's been living in Mexico the last few years. He started a nonprofit to help homeless dogs called VivaPerros.org. And you can find out all about him at JoeKing.com. He's on Facebook. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. He is a beautiful dude. I think the world of him. And I was very honored that he came over and sat down and talked to me and hung out for a while. And we had a great time, great conversation. He talked about his new band a lot, and he did fail to mention his buddy Chuggy. And he asked me afterwards, he said, "Hey man, I forgot to mention Chuggy," which I totally understand. Chuggy, you'll understand. When you're in the zone and you're just talking to someone, sometimes everything doesn't come out. So he really thought about it. He was like, "Oh shoot, I don't think I really mentioned Chuggy." So Chuggy, shout out to you, buddy, from Joe King Carrasco and me, Johnny Gowdy, and all of the people here at How Did I Get Here. So, yeah, sit back and enjoy this conversation. It'll be coming up in just a minute. Oh, you know what? I want to tell you guys about this film I became aware of. It's called Slash. Slash is a coming-of-age comedy that follows introverted high school freshman Neil, an avid writer of slash fiction, which is a subgenre of erotic fan fiction. And anyway, I wanted to find out more about it. They've got a Kickstarter that ends on Friday, September 25th. My friend Amy told me, hey, get a hold of Clay Lyford, and you can talk to him about this movie, Slash. Great movie, great idea. Let's talk to Clay Lyford right now. Clay Lyford and his new film, Slash. You are you're 95% done with this film, but you started this Kickstarter to get the last 5%. Tell us about Slash.
So Slash is a high school coming of age comedy about a kind of a sexually confused high school freshman named Neil who doesn't really have a lot of outlets for his weird sexual feelings, so he kind of is turned to the world of sci-fi internet erotica, where he writes stories mostly for his own edification. Just writes stories about his favorite sci-fi character,
right?
Which in our world is this made-up character named Vanguard, who's, I guess you could call, he's like kind of like a space Harry Potter of sorts, like a YA, you know, famous YA character. And then he meets another girl in his school who's very like-minded, And she kind of convinces him to start publishing his stuff online, and he kind of comes a little bit of internet famous for it. And no one knows that he's actually 15. And eventually he's invited to go present his stuff at this convention, and they make this big trip to this convention, and it's kind of like, well, is the secret going to get out? What's going to happen? All these people that, you know, in this community that think he's a different person than who he is.
Right, when he shows up, he's like this kid.
Yeah, he's like this kid. Exactly.
So what you're raising money for is when he's writing the fan fiction about Vanguard, you're going to have flashes to the actual...
entire sequences, actually. Okay. So we figured the best way to depict his writing, instead of just having it be like hearing his inner monologue on screen and looking at, you know, like a keyboard, would be to actually show, like, as if he, like, his version of what this would look like. But obviously, you know, when you, like... you know, if you watch, you know, if you, even if you're like a reader of Harry Potter, like, you're going to see Daniel Radcliffe in your head, right? Like, right. You're at that point. You just can't, yeah. You can't get away from the Hollywood machine. So in the world of our movie, this Vanguard character has already had like 4 movies made from his properties. So the idea is that even his like weird fantasies that you see his depicted are going to be depicted as if they were, you know, kind of morphation, that's not even a word. They were just kind of like bastardized versions of these Hollywood films. So the idea is to make it look like this kind of like big budgety, you know, actioneer, which happens to be a weird, have a weird erotic bent to it. Almost like a, I kind of say it's like a gay space Barbarella of sorts, maybe like a modernized Barbarella if made by Michael Bay.
Wow. So yeah, nice big, that's what you're getting the funding for, is to make those sequences.
I literally just got back from Los Angeles. We did the scouting, like everything's coming together. Like the costumes are absolutely incredible. We're in the middle of casting those scenes, and then we are shooting at like these amazing locations. The exteriors of this alien planet are up at this place called Vasquez Rock.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which is
what,
like
you were telling me about yesterday. Go ahead and say it.
Oh, well, Vasquez Rock is like this. It's the most famous like rock formation, I think, in any type of science fiction. Like it's like famous. Like it's like a character. It's like the Johnny Depp of rock formations because like you've seen it in every Star Trek episode. Like it was Vulcan in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. But most famously, the one I remembered from when I was a kid, it was where Spock. I just look like a dork. Where Kirk fought the green Gorn warrior in the episode Arena of the original Star Trek, when he throws that boulder at that green lizard monster.
Right.
That was like literally, we were standing on the spot where that happens. And then we have this amazing spaceship where we're basically modifying, because, you know, we are at our heart, we're still a low budget film. We're trying to look big budget. And we have some, you know, we've been fortunate to attract such a great amount of talent for our budget, like, you know, Michael Ian Black, Lucy Pyle, you know, Hannah Marks, Michael Johnson. Like, our cast is incredible.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, you know, the you know, we're pinching the pennies until Lincoln screams.
Right.
And we...
I've never heard that term. That's great.
I got that from my old boss, Lloyd Kaufman from Troma. That was one of his little adages. But we are shooting this spaceship set. It's like a standing spaceship set that's been around for years, and it's in Laurel Canyon on the stage. And it's like, it was using Critters. It was using Ice Pirates. Apparently it was used in Serenity, or actually in Firefly. That was a big one. It was a recurring set from Firefly, but we're just like modifying it. We're modifying it enough to, you know, so it's its own thing, but hopefully it'll actually, I like the idea that you kind of still see some film history in both our locations for this. But yeah, between that and these amazing costumes, our costume department, like the people who did it, they're so great. One of our lead costumers, she just came off of the $80 million remake of Pete's Dragon that one of my best friends is directing, David Lowry, who is an Easter egg, is David Lowry's cameo in our movie is he's the director of the big budget Vanguard movie.
Oh, yes.
The fake big budget Vanguard movie. I'm sure he'd be very happy I was using his name to promote my movie right now, but whatever.
But when you say David Lowry, to me, I think of the lead singer of Kemper Bain Beethoven.
Yeah, no, exactly, right? Well, not for long. Yeah, not for long. He's amazing, and he's out there, and he's doing the good. He's fighting the good fight.
Yeah. So you made a short.
Yeah.
How much of this film is based on that short?
Weirdly, a lot of the plot points are the same, but I think this tonally, it's just very different, because in the short film, we needed something very iconic something that you would instantly identify, and then the jokes would work, like, without having to be set up. So we made it about Harry Potter fanfic, like Harry Potter erotica.
Right.
Or Potter erotica.
Potter erotica.
And it was kind of like, and it was about a much younger kid, because I thought it would be more shocking. Because you can do that in like a 9-minute short film, I felt. Like, you could have like a 13-year-old kid getting in trouble for writing this. He doesn't even know what he's writing. He's like cribbing stuff from his sister's, like his older sister's diary.
Right.
And like this, like changing it to be about Dumbledore. And then he also gets invited out to this convention, and like, you know, then people see how young he is and they freak out. And that works for 9 minutes. But like a couple of things occurred to me when we were doing a feature was that, like, I feel like you can withstand the sense of danger of like child endangerment over a 9-minute film, especially when you see that our intentions are not terrible.
Right.
But like stretching that out, even just that sheer age difference of like a couple of years, like stretching that over to a 90-minute film, it was a bridge too far
right.
to have him be still that young.
Right.
Also, this the amount of like the emotional range of that character is like it's too much for a 13-year-old, I think, to handle. At least it's too much for me I'm not good enough of a director to get out of a 13-year-old.
Right.
But then on top of that, like the other thing was the short film I made, you know, myself and my producer Farah, we made it out of pocket. And we always knew because we were using Harry Potter copyrighted material, we probably couldn't sell it. And it's a short film. It's not meant to be sold. But this is a feature, and it has responsibilities to our investors. And like, we have to make money off of it. I mean, it is a commercial venture. And because of that, we couldn't risk using, even if we could say, you know, you could make an argument that this is within fair use to use Harry Potter, that it falls under parody, falls under certain protections.
Right. But, yeah.
But like, do we want to be held up in court for however many years? And do we have the legal team to fight like Warner Brothers? No. So we decided to make up our own property. Plus the other thing with in a 90-minute film, you have enough time to do like the, you know, the quote unquote, the world building
right.
that you need to do to set up. Like, I can establish the sense of like the character of this Vanguard and his enemies and his friends and his world. And that's another strong reason why we're depicting it visually.
Right.
Instead of just having it be text. Because, like, in the short film, the Harry Potter's is read by a local musician, Sally Crewe.
Oh, yeah.
Sally's amazing. Yeah, Sally's great. And she has this great British voice. So she's our fake J.K. Rowling in it.
Okay.
And so we have her doing this J.K. Rowling voice. And she's great. And you get the joke because everyone knows who Harry and Draco. And they know these characters. So I don't have to explain it. You don't even, like, you get a picture in your head.
Right.
But this is, like, very different. And, you know, I think that, again, if you add in all these factors that modify the short, like you add in the world building, you add in the depth of character, which necessitates a slightly, for me, necessitates an older character. But still one that like, he needs to feel out of his element. Like, it's a big thing in the slash community is that most slash, and I did extensive research for this, and I come from this kind of background. Like, I do come from general fandom. I'm not a slash writer. But I grew up at Comic Cons. Like, my dad would take me to Comic Cons when I was 10 and drop me off with like a hand, like a $20, and be like, go, you know, I'll pick you up in 6 hours. Don't get in trouble. And I would always see these things happening like in the adult rooms on the fringes. And I would always be wondering what's going on there.
Yeah.
But these, and not to digress too much, but the slash writers and generally slashers, they're generally old women, you know, traditionally in their, you know, I mean, they're not like kids, they're like in their 30s and 40s. And, you know, we're very cognizant of that, and it's...
But it adds to the humor of coming of age to put it in...
Well, it's the fish out of water. He's a character who's kind of like a man without a country, right?
Yeah, it's not as funny if a person of age is doing... You know what I mean?
But for so many reasons, too, he's like a man without a country, and so to speak, he doesn't fit in as... It's like his journey is he doesn't fit in his high school. He doesn't fit in with his own peer group. And then when he goes to the thing that he actually loves, the thing that he actually connects to on the internet, then when he actually goes to meet those people in person, it's like he doesn't fit in again.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, but then you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. And I feel like it's interesting. We've had such varied reaction already. Like, none of the film has been released.
Right.
There's been, you know, there's a Kickstarter. Just
a little bit that you can see on the Kickstarter.
Which are just individual images that are culled, and then, like, some description of our cast. But, like, the reaction from the slash community has been very mixed. We've had some very supportive people who've been so generous with their time and, like, advice. And I rely on that advice very strongly because this is a world that I know enough about that I don't feel like I'm a complete, you know, nunyuk coming into it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like I need that, you know... it's very helpful to have that advice. And I've been, been very respectful to those people. But then I get like on Tumblr, or you get on these websites and you just see like thousands upon thousands, like literally we're in the thousands now of people who are like, I don't know if offended is the right word, but they're very taken aback by the fact that our lead character
is a young white male.
Yeah. Because it's a trigger for a lot of reasons for them. It's a trigger because they're afraid that we're saying that they condone minors.
Right.
Which we clearly, that's not what's happening in the movie. But also the fact that it doesn't represent, like, you know, we've taken, you know, this is a female empowerment, you know, a genre which is about female empowerment, about removing, it's about the whole idea. When I was talking to slash writers or slashers, sorry, it's a very particular term. A lot of it's just about removing the male gaze. It's like, because slash fiction is, it's man on man. It's like two men having relations. It's exclusively traditionally gay.
Because they have, I saw like, some A-team stuff. I mean, I started looking it up.
Well, because there's like, it's femme slash if it's female.
Yeah.
But then it's het fiction if it's, right. It's not a term anymore. It's het if it's heterosexual, obviously. But the idea that like it's mostly straight women writing essentially gay sex, and but the reason is actually kind of interestingly more political than I thought, and it's really about removing the male gaze. And it's like they can have. There can be a sense of a sexual liberating sexual fantasy that takes the idea of objectifying women out of the equation because there's literally no women.
Right.
And so that's where it gets weird. So it's like I'm a guy with a male character in the limelight, white male director.
Right.
And I'm in this world which was established largely
by women.
By women for to empower, you know, some degree of political empowerment. It's weird how much politics are involved in this. There in China recently, like when we were going to production, there are these Chinese girls that were arrested. Like we're literally arrested for writing this stuff. Like it's going to get you in jail. It'll get you put away. I mean, there's like, you know, so there's like I totally understand.
Yeah.
The level of. The importance, right. You know, like I get it. And so like, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. I guess I was not expecting this level of reaction, which I guess is good. I mean, it sparks conversation and I feel like to some degree.
And do they know it's a comedy? Do they realize it's like a funny movie?
Do you know it's a comedy, but that's also scary to them because I'm the first to say it. And I'd say before, it's like, look, this is not an Adam Sandler comedy. It's not like, look at these crazy people.
Right. Right.
There's no tomato throwing. It's not like that. It's like,
right. What was that movie with Adam Sandler and the guy from the show, the big guy, Paul Blart. It was just like one joke.
Oh,
that's hey, we're gay. That's not even funny. That, you know what I'm talking about? That movie should have been called We're Gay.
Me, Chuck, and Larry.
Yeah.
But this is the idea that like you can make fun. You can like I am a nerd. I come from a lot of nerdy things. I do a lot of nerdy things. I make fun of myself. My friends make fun of ourselves. It's like any community that cannot make fun of itself is not a community. Like, but it's the difference between making fun of yourself and then like this mean-spirited like.
Right. And so
look at these freaks.
Right.
Which is absolutely not what we are.
Right. So you've got a Kickstarter set up to finish it up. It's a funny movie. People should go at least check out the Kickstarter because I think you get a taste of what you're going to expect. And it's pretty well explained in there.
I think so.
Right down to Vanguard and what you plan on doing with that.
The updates have been very awesome. Like if you it's weird the way Kickstarter, the page operates, but if you have to like click on the updates tab, you'll see on the updates tab, you'll see like a lot of the things like character sketches, costumes.
Yeah, the costumes look really good.
Yeah, it's more than I ever would have hoped for.
People should check it out. In the text of this podcast, I'll put a link to that Kickstarter and then also on our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You guys have a Facebook page.
We do.
You also have a Twitter account.
Yeah, @/themovie, I believe.
Okay. So yeah, they can check it out, follow it. I'll put the links to the Kickstarter and we should get... give what you can to this movie. Get it out there.
And we got some matchings coming out too this week.
Right, I saw you saying that.
And on top of that, one of the coolest things too is our cast has been so generous. They've actually, we have a series which we're slowly rolling out of some of our more known cast members actually reading erotica that we culled and got cleared from the internet. So like, I know this week, Devin Faraci with Badass Digest, or Birth Death Movies, whatever it's called now. They released our Michael Ian Black and Missy Pyle reading Harry Potter erotica.
Oh, great. I'll put that on the Facebook page too. So, yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
People should check it out. All right, Clay, is there anything else we need to know?
Oh, gosh.
Give the movie.
Hopefully you guys will like it. And yeah. And I think it's something that we've never seen before. And I think, honestly, it's the first time I've ever seen this subject tackled in a narrative film.
Yeah, and it looked funny, and it didn't look insulting at all. It looks like the humor actually comes from actually coming of age and being confused sexually, which is hilarious. There's no way around it. That is just hilarious.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Guys, that's Clay Lyford and his new movie, Slash. You've got until September 25th, that's next Friday, to give to this this film. And if you go this week, they'll match dollar for dollar, and so your money will count double. So go on out there, check it out. You can find it on our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also find it on the text of this podcast. It will be a link for the Kickstarter. Help him out, Clay Lyford, and I bet you're going to go start looking up slasher fiction, aren't you? I did. Anyway, all right. Hey, let's talk to my guest today. It's the great Joe King Carrasco. His new album, Joe King Carrasco y Los Side Effects, Chileando, is out now. You can pick it up. It is his most rocking album to date. We had a great conversation. You know, I love Joe King, known him for a long time, been a fan of his for a long time, and I was glad to get him over to the apartment, sit down, and talk about life with him. Great guy, Joe King Carrasco. Let's do it. Let's get down. Have a great week. Woo! I was at this birthday party.
Yeah.
And Kathy Valentine was there, and she said to say hi to you.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then I was talking to AJ Vallejo. Do you know him from Vallejo? He was like, hey, so what, you know, who you got coming on the show? I was like, oh, I got Joe King Carrasco coming tomorrow. And he was like, tell him that Gay said when he moved here in 1995 or something, he saw you do a stage dive at Steamboat.
Yeah.
That he became a stage diver after. He was like, I'm doing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Oh,
yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Come check my leg today.
So you live part-time in Mexico in Puerto Vallarta?
Yeah, I have a house in Puerto Vallarta. Actually, it's outside of Puerto Vallarta. It's in it's a place called Las Mortes. It's near PTA, which is, I live where all the workers live.
Okay.
And so I don't live with a tour star. And so it takes about, we have a club called Nacho Daddy that I was one of the original founders of. We have Tex-Mex there and I play there. And it's about 35 minutes from where I live.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's like we've been going since 2009. So when I come, you know, back every night after a couple of three margaritas, it's like I was driving for a while through those traffics. And it's like, and they had this thing called alcoholimetros, you know. It's Mexican checkpoints where they blow into somebody's hand.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I learned all the, I'm not that much of a drinker, but I learned all the back roads to get back to my house, you know, 40 minutes later, you know, every night on Saturday and Friday nights. And then a friend of mine that was playing in a blues band there said, why don't you just take a taxi? So I started taking taxis the last 3 years. So I have a taxi driver now, a couple of taxi drivers, and so I talked to them all the way to the gig. So it's kind of cool, but yeah, it's a wholly different scene down there, you know.
When you come back here, does it freak you out? Does Austin freak you out?
Yeah, it does.
Like visually, when you pull in, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. I went in down South Lamar yesterday, you know?
Yeah, that's the weirdest.
And it reminds me of the canyons of Manhattan, you know, starting to, you know, the canyons of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And it's starting to look like that. I'm going, wow. And I was asking somebody at Waterloo, I says, where'd all these people come from and what do they do and where do they, you know, where are they getting the money for all this, you know? I mean, what is it, you know?
Yeah, that is the one thing they're talking. There's so much talk. I don't know. Do you know about the census, the music census that came out? And the
Where the musicians are getting edged out or something? Or?
Yeah, where they just realize musicians are poor.
Yeah, they're getting what?
Where musicians are poor, they just realize it. But you can't. They can't really afford living in town. I mean,
yeah.
As soon as they decide to tear this place down and put up condos, I'm going to, you know.
Are they going to do that?
I don't know.
Probably, yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, I was talking to Terry Lacaze, you know, and he's got a thing where he lives in an apartment like this, but he shows them how much he makes, and he gets a deal, you know, $750, which is not great, but it's okay.
Right. So, sorry to get off the real estate market, but Chileando, man, what a great album.
You like it? It's cool.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And it's your toughest sounding album. You know what I mean? It's recorded. Rick Del Castillo did a great job, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like your hardest, out of the gate, it's like your hardest rocking album.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, I had all the Tex-Mex stuff. I have like, you know, 60 songs sitting there, and he took all the rockers.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. And so, and he's playing on it, and he had us, you know, he kept doing take after take after take till it was like perfect.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's really, it's the most rocking record I've ever done.
Yeah.
I just hope other people recognize that. I mean, Rick did a really good job. And he did most of the arrangements too.
That's great, man. He played on it. You did it out at his place in Kyle.
Yeah.
How was that?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he is a great producer, man. He is a really great producer.
He is. Yeah. Did he engineer it as well?
Oh, he engineered it, produced it, did everything. Yeah.
Because like the way it's recorded is really just, it's great, super real and organic, and very dry and like.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting what you're hearing. It's making the hair on my arm stand up just talking about it. It's really good, man.
No, I was, you know, it was a real magical experience. We took our time doing it. And Albert, you know, Albert Bestedo was the bass player for Del Castillo for 12 years. He and Rick were roommates, so they know each other real well. And, you know, Albert came from a band called The Connectors from the Valley. They're the best band on the island, on South Padre. Uh-huh. And he is the most underrecognized lead guitar player in Texas. And him and Rick played together. So, and Albert's out there. And so the interesting thing is that Albert and Rick can work together. And Albert, the solos that Albert's doing on this thing are incredible. I mean, he's a really great guitar player.
Yeah.
And I'm playing lead on it too. But, and Rick is, but man, Albert's doing some real tasty stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The albums, it really is great. And I get excited because I get scared for myself as a musician that as I get older, I'm going to start kind of, you know what I mean?
Mellow out.
Or not mellow out, but like just kind of lose your edge a little bit, you know? But there's guys like you and Alejandro out there that are like John D. I mean, guys that are just still kicking ass, like still making real music.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going out, you got to go out rocking. Right? What else can you do, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. And there was a little less Tex-Mex stuff on this. It's the first one I've done that didn't really have those Tex-Mex vamps, and so I hope that people like it. It's a little more bluesy, you know? And it comes from living in Puerto Vallarta at a place called Nacho Daddy's. I'm watching where people are at, and I sort of ride around what I see, you know?
Yeah. You know, there, it still has your songs, though. Like, you have there's a levity to your songs.
Yeah.
No matter what really you're singing, there's like, you have a sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You play music that's both rock and roll and Tex-Mex, and you sing like that too, which is really awesome.
Well, it's Chuck Berry. Yeah. To a degree.
Yeah, yeah.
The first song, My Ding Dong Daddy Don't Daddy No More, is I'm from north of Amarillo. It's Dumas, right?
Uh-huh.
I grew up in Dumas and in Dumas, the theme song for the high school, every game, your whole life, you just hear, I'm a ding-dong daddy from Dumas. You hear that every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's the theme of Dumas, right? And so, and I was playing my, when I had the Crowns, a reunion, we played my high school reunion, right? And And they were looking at me like, and I told everybody in the band, I says, I don't think my ding dong daddy don't daddy no more, you know. And that's where that came from. I had the title. Then I had this crazy dream, I guess about a year ago. It was a dream, and it was Jay Leno in a little sports car singing. He had a helmet on, and it was, I used to rock, and he was singing. And I woke up and I thought, wow, he's a comedian. He doesn't sing, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, what song was he singing? Because it was really good, and that was the song he was singing. And so I was pretty close to that, and that's where it kind of came from, you know. Yeah. And it came from a dream.
Do you wake up and write when you hear that stuff?
Exactly. I'm halfway asleep, halfway not asleep.
Yeah.
And something comes, and I have a tape recorder. I still use cassettes because if I use digital, it'll get deleted.
Yeah.
And so I'll put it down, and I'll put it down on cassette as fast as I can, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how I operate. I mean, I do it almost every night, right, as I'm getting this place. You can either get up and grab your guitar or grab the idea, or you can go fall back to sleep. And it's just, there's an interim place where you're getting this gift. And so most of the time, about 80% of the time I'll put it on tape, but there's 20% I go, I'll remember it tomorrow. Yeah. Which you don't.
Which you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to grab them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like that when I'm riding around or something, I'm always writing songs down, you know, ideas down on pieces of paper. And I've sort of started doing it on my iPhone, but it's not good to text while you're driving. So anyway, so that's how I write, you know. And in Mexico, you know, I'm doing the same thing. I'm when I'm not working at Nacho Daddy, I'm going down the coast, surfing or body surfing down the coast, and I've always got my tapes going and listen, you know, working on ideas. And the hardest part is going back into your tapes and dissecting them and trying to figure out what your brain was doing, right?
Yeah.
That's the hardest part.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you friends with Sammy Hagar?
I have known Sammy, yeah.
Because in my dream life of yours,
yeah,
you guys are like, you like ride three-wheelers over to each other's houses and hang out and jam out. Just because he has that sort of like same laid back.
Yeah. Well, I hung out with him, and you know, he's got his place in Cabo and I got this place in Vallarta. Yeah. Yeah. And but his seems to be doing a little bit better than mine. I think he made a $30 million deal on his tequila, you know. Well, we have the dog rescue, but Viva Petals.
That is a great.
And so we're going to make a Viva Petals tequila, you know.
Oh, that's great.
And then all my money, if I have any when I die, is going to go to the Viva Petals to saving dogs, you know. So that's
good.
So that's kind of why I'm still doing what I do.
I have a couple of awesome dogs. They don't live with me. They live with my ex, their mom, but we have dual custody.
Yeah. And so and today is the day, my Jack Russell, she's been every show I've done for 19 years. Today's her 19th birthday.
Wow.
She's 19 years old, hanging in there, man. We just did a 3-week tour, and we went from New Mexico, Colorado, all the way up to Idaho, to Seattle, and back down to Oregon and California, San Diego, and back. You know,
yeah.
And she made it, you know, barely.
Well, you have three of them, right?
Well, one died in January, okay. And I got her, and she's like barely hanging in there. It's like, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, I take her still with me, and she's hanging in there. She's tenacious.
While we're talking about Viva Perros, can we, people can go to vivaperros.org and donate there and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we sell these Mexican bags that go to the Viva Perros stuff too.
I'll post a link on the Facebook page and stuff for you. I think that's a great, great thing that you're doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you go through Mexico, man. You go see all these dogs, man. They and you feel really bad for them. And Vallarta, there's enough of a community there where they really try to rescue dogs. But that's just only one town out of 10,000 towns. And most towns in Mexico, dogs just don't have a chance. You know. And it's a tough place to be a dog, you know. And also, we're going to try to donate to Kathmandu, the dogs of Kathmandu Kathmandonia, because of the earthquake, right?
Right.
But it's that, you know, that keeps me going.
Yeah. That's totally. Can I tell you a story real fast?
Yeah.
Okay. So I lived in Austin in the mid '80s when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then I moved away after my mom died, like in the 85. Came back though in 91.
Yeah.
Okay. And then started playing and stuff. Anyway, I had this trio and we had this gig. I want to say it was like 1996. And it was at Cafe on the Square in San Marcos.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we showed up for our gig there. and there was already a band set up. And we were like, what? And so we went and talked to the dude. He's like, no, you know, you're not booked. And it was you that was playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I can't remember exactly how it all went down, but I know that you were like, you kind of knew. I think we were like, oh, you know, shit. Like, if we don't play tonight, we're not going to be able to get to Corpus tomorrow. You know, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
And you had us play. And we got paid. I don't know if it was you that did it or if they did it, but I've always like been like, that guy's a hero to me.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, you made sure that we got to do our gig.
I think I remember that gig, too.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so, yeah, then, and then you went left. Where'd you go back after that? You left Austin after that? Or?
Oh, no. I lived in Austin then. I lived here in the Congress House. Actually, you know what? I lived in the Congress House when I moved here in 1991, and they had cable there, and I was watching Comedy Central one afternoon, like 91, 92, and I saw your, I can't find it anywhere now, but I saw your Saturday Night Live. SNL. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of the, there's three people that were banned from Saturday Night Live. It was me and Captain Beefheart and
Elvis?
Tom
Petty?
The jazz trumpet.
Wynton Marsalis?
No.
Miles Davis?
Miles Davis, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He took, yeah.
So what happened? Because you ran out in the
audience. Yeah, I ran out in the audience. And it freaked the camera guys out. And it freaked the camera guys out. And they were like, cameras are going around and around. And where did he go? Yeah. You know, and it came. But it was cool. It was a good show. And I you know, in retrospect, I did Don't Bug Me, Baby, which was a great rocker. And I did it. But in some ways, I wish I'd done Buena, because I still play Buena, and it's a really good song. But it was a good show.
I remember seeing Buena on MTV.
Yeah, that was my first video.
Yeah,
we shot that and I got in that video. It was controversial because I got arrested in front of Buckingham Palace.
Oh yeah,
we were shooting and I marched. I went in front of the Royal Guardsmen. You know, they're changing the guards, and I was singing, lip syncing, and. Man, all of a sudden, I felt myself being lifted up off the ground.
Yeah,
you know, and all of a sudden, I was hanging in the air, and I was running, and there was a horse beside me, and I was being, you know, somebody had my neck.
Wow.
Yeah, and the guy was carrying me by the neck, and he said, "You're under arrest." I'm shooting a video, you know, and he says, "You've been," and they sent me down. Says, "You insulted the Queen and the Prince of Wales and all this stuff," and I'm going. And I'm thinking, God, they're going to deport me, man, you know? It's like, also, I'm getting arrested in front of Buckingham Palace. I'm just going, God, I've been 3 days in England. I'm already, you know, getting thrown out. But the director came over and apologized and said we were shooting a video. But the sad thing is the camera crew freaked out and stopped shooting when they saw it going down.
Right.
Had they kept shooting, it would have been really...
Yeah, that would have been a cool video.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I was just reading this book called I Want My MTV. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
It's this book that's kind of... It's fantastic. It's one of those books where they have just like a paragraph from like tons of artists, people, executives at MTV, record executives, video directors, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that you were a guy that they wanted to be like an MTV artist, artist that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You did the Christmas song and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is intense, man.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, I just sort of like, you know, okay. It was fun, you know, and I hosted a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And it's like, boom, you can host in 30 minutes and be done. You know, I was like, okay. But it was fun. I had a good time doing it. And, you know, I still hear them on satellite radio, you know, Martha Quinn and those guys. And hey, you know, it was good. It's funny. MTV's not the same as it was then or Fresh, you know?
No. Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. I've been in Mexico for 9 years, right?
Yeah.
And they still have MTV shows like MTV in Mexico where it's just bands playing. And you get to see bands from Argentina and all the bands from Mexico. And they still have that vibe down there, which they don't have here. There's music still, you know. Rock and roll is still new to people down there, you know, and they're still, you know, they're not cynical with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you're getting, it's like really happening. That's one of the reasons I moved to Mexico, because they're still like, man, okay, let's go do it, you know?
Yeah.
And they're still having these cool festivals, and it's a different vibe, but it's really cool. I mean, it's rock and roll. There's great bands. I listen to bands from Argentina and Los Babasónicos and the Fabulous Cadillacs, and And there's always great bands, rock bands in Mexico. So it's that's what keeps me. And I sit and I don't get what goes on here in the States. So I just get exposed to what's going down there. So I see a little bit what goes on up here, but it's pretty good for me to, you know, down there, be there, because I see a difference, you know, something different.
Well, there's a part of you, it seems, that's always been there.
Yeah.
Even when you were here,
yeah,
there was like half of you was here.
Yeah, yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? Yeah, 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 yeah. And so you get a lot of, and also you get a lot of European TV there. So you're seeing what's going on in Europe, and
right,
you get German TV and Spain. So yeah, it keeps my writing fresh to a degree. And so on this, what I do is I try to write, you know, with Spanish. Everybody's done rock and roll. You can say pretty much everything. Everything's been said. It's been said. So I just kind of turned it over to more Spanglish now, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully people can get that Spanglish. That's what chileando means. Chileando means chilling out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where it's vamos a chilear, go chill out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm Cuban, so there's all kinds of, yeah, like,
yeah,
those kinds,
yeah,
of,
yeah, well, I think that's more, I think chileando is a Cuban expression out of Miami, yeah. And yeah, hangiando's hanging out.
Hangiando. Do you still get to Europe and play?
I haven't here lately, but I still, yeah, we did a few years ago, went back to toured Europe as a three-piece, and we did 12,000 miles, man.
Wow.
Yeah, it was hard. But it was good. I love Europe, and I hope to go back, you know? Maybe this will get me back.
Yeah. I hope so, man, because this is great. I saw you were getting some play on the satellite stations.
We get played on Outlaw Radio.
Outlaw Radio.
A lot. Yeah, Mojo plays us a lot. In fact, when we were just in San Diego, he came out to our show and soundcheck, and he plays us a lot.
That's great,
so
man.
Mojo's really a good guy, man.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to be on Garage.
Yeah.
Little Steven, that's what my goal, man. Is, you know, just.
Do you know him?
I've never met Little Steven. I like his stuff. I like what he does, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I like his show. He's a real big fan of music.
Yeah, and I like what they do. Do you listen to Garage?
No, I don't listen to satellite radio.
Yeah,
but I know his show.
Yeah, it's a great. I kind of go between Garage, you know, Outlaw Country is Mojo, and then Bluesville. It's kind of those, and then a couple of Latin ones, you know.
Yeah,
kind of they keep that mix going.
Yeah,
and then when I'm driving back and forth, man, I don't know if people know this, but the last few years I've been driving back and forth across from Nuevo Laredo all the way to Jalisco.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with my three dogs, mostly by myself, and that's pretty intense, because there's a lot, you know, you're out there in the middle of the desert, there's a lot of military checkpoints, there's a drug war going on, you know, so it's a lot of guns, a lot of, you know, 50 caliber machine guns, and so you got to get used to,
right?
Yeah, and you got to get used to talking to 17-year-old kids with Uzis and stuff like that, and you know, AK-47s pointed at you, and it's you know, it's kind of crazy, you know, and so I give them drink passes from Nacho Daddy and talk to them, and it's sometimes 8 times a day I've been pulled over, you know, and checked out, and it's like, you know, you it's this military auto, you know, all of a sudden you start seeing sandbags and, you know,
yeah.
It's like, and so that's a lot of the writing I do. It comes from those experiences of just seeing that every day, you know?
Yeah.
Or in Vallarta, I'll be picking up my bass player and you're waiting for him to come out of his house, and you're parked in between two Humvees with machine guns, guys running all around. You're waiting for him to come out and get in the car, and you just sort of like, that's the kind of, you live with that, you know, and you go, wow, do I really want to be living like this? But it's, you know, it's Mexico, and I've got property there, and so I'm a permanent Mexican resident, you know.
Wow.
And so I try to just, you know, hope that it gets better there. And when you're driving back and forth, you know, it's you see a lot of crazy stuff, man. I don't know anybody's seen more crazy stuff than me.
Yeah.
I don't see any gringos on the road there anymore. Huh. Not driving, you know.
Huh.
And you don't drive at night. Ever. Yeah. What's that?
Well,
when you hit the checkpoints at night, everybody's got, they all wear a mask, right? So all you see is eyes, and it's all dark, and you're seeing somebody with a mask leaning in your car. You know?
Yeah, that's not good. That is not good.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, okay. So and then, you know, you're seeing a lot of some of the hotels that I stay at, they're occupied by federales, troops that are, because there's like a war going on, right?
Yeah.
So there's 2 days in a row one time, the first hotel was in Guadalajara, and it's like, I had a room, and there was like 60 other rooms that are all occupied by guys in flak, you know, military special forces guys. Right. And they're all out in the halls, you know, texting their girlfriends, and there's me and my three dogs. And, you know, you can tell they've been on the move all day. And then the next night, the same thing. The next hotel was the same way. And there's like, you know, all these special forces guys there, and me and my three dogs. And so it's like going, wow, this is pretty intense, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's sort of reflected in my writing to a degree. I see it every day.
Yeah. Do you tour around there or just play it?
Up down the coast, West Coast, and we played Mexico City. I have a pretty good following in Mexico City.
Yeah.
We played a big show there, and they knew all the 80s albums, they knew all the words to all the songs. I'm going, wow. So yeah, Mexico City is a cool place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much of that stuff do you still play? Like, I mean, just out of a question, because you've got so much material now.
I know, it's weird. I do Caca de Vaca, I do Buena, and I do some off of the original Molina. I try to do a little bit off each album. I don't do Don't Let a Woman Make a Fool Out of You, which was the Michael Jackson thing, which I should. But I try to do two songs off each CD.
How did that happen? How did Michael Jackson?
When we were with MCA,
yeah,
we were at Studio 55 in Los Angeles, and we were in one studio. It was like this house here, and they were in Jackson 5 were in the other, mixing their Jackson 5 live CD. And,
oh, wow.
And the brothers were in that. My band and all the guys in my band, everybody's watching the World Series.
In like a lounge.
And then in the office, which was off there, was Michael sitting there, and I was on there trying to figure out my words to my songs, right? So he'd be sitting at one desk, I was at another, and I started talking, started saying, you know, talking to him, you know, a lot. And I like Bob Marley, so he told me, you know, that he'd hung out with Bob Marley, so I kept just asking stuff about that, you know, and you know, kept asking stuff. We were talking about music, then this was back in the 80s, I had a Walkman, and he didn't even have a Walkman then.
Wow.
You know, and I had Off the Wall, and I said, hey, you want to hear your album Off the Wall? And I just, you know, back then I recorded the vinyl onto the cassette, right?
Yeah,
And he spent like 3 days listening to that over and over and over again, you know? Wow. And
so Thriller wasn't out yet.
No.
No. It was like the Michael Jackson that was famous to me when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I had a cartoon on TV.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Grew up and said, hey, I'm going to go, but pre, like, explosion thriller thing. Wow.
And then he said, hey, you want to go with me check mixes? So I go around with him to go listen to mixes, you know, and I'd see all these business guys looking at him like seeing what how he liked the mixes. And then he had a white a Rolls Royce or something outside, and I'd see all these girls like hanging out at his Rolls Royce, and you know, he was a really nice guy, he's real cool. I just, you know, and I invited him to some shows out there, he didn't come, but I did talk to him on the phone, he's got his phone number, you know.
Wow.
He was, and then I said, hey, you know, nobody in my band can sing this harmony, can you come do it? And he said, yeah. So he did five-part harmonies, just layered harmonies, great singer. You know, we were like microphone to microphone. By that time, you know, he would hung out, you know, enough that we knew each other pretty well. Wasn't, you know, like nervous or anything, 'cause I'd see him every day. And so he nailed it, you know.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
Good guy, you know. And then I said, man, you know, I started playing the African music, tried to turn him on to all this different stuff. I was playing a bunch of reggae stuff. And I said, you know, you need to do like an African record, you know. And had he listened to me, probably would still be here today. Yeah. Probably wouldn't have been as big as Thriller, but, you know.
Anyway, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But he was a good guy. I liked him, you know.
What kind of African stuff? I've been listening to a lot of Fela Kuti lately.
Yeah, Fela Kuti. I just saw the stuff, you know, different, all those guitars, just the guitar stuff out of Africa.
I love that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's cool. I think African music's really cool. And I think it's changing over there. That stuff, the stuff that happened in the 60s and 70s, I don't think it's happening anymore. It's got more electronic now.
Right.
So it's...
That's the stuff that I really like kind of the soul funk.
Yeah, exactly.
West African thing.
And who's the guy that had the radio show, you know... You know, back on KUT,
John Ailey?
No, he died. The guy, he was.
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll
remember.
Yeah, he got busted here, and he
Dan Del Santo.
Dan Del Santo, and then he went to Oaxaca, and Dan Del Santo was really, you know, he played those African shows, you know.
Yeah,
and he was a great guy too, man.
He's credited for coming up with the term world beat.
Really?
That's what they. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and his show was really incredible.
Huh. There was something else I was going to ask you about the 80s.
The Go-Go's?
The Go-Go's. Did you toured with, like, you opened for, like, the Police and the Go-Go's?
Yeah, I opened for the Police. I did a bunch of gigs of Joan Jett, The Fix. I you know, we did really open for Grand Funk. We opened for Black Oak, Arkansas. We, you know, it's like, ah, you name it, I opened for them. We did Tour of the Talking Heads. We did Boomtown Rats, you know, and a lot of the Police, you know, and a lot of Go-Go's and a lot of Joan Jett and everybody, you know.
That's awesome. Yeah. Did you know Kathy from here or no?
I knew Kathy. She came to one of my shows at the Whiskey Go-Go, you know, and that's before I think she was even in the Go-Go's.
Okay.
You know, that's where I knew her from. And then she got into Go-Go's and wow, you know, and at that point, and then I lived on 6th Street in West Lynn, and I had a condo, and her mother was my next door neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
So when Joe Nick left, Margaret became my manager.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my manager was Margaret Valentine, you know, and her daughter was a go-go. And then that's how I knew Clem Burke. You know, I spent Christmas with Clem and hung out with him in England. And yeah, it was pretty cool. Margaret was really cool.
That's weird. I'm just doing a whole circle. You're friends with BP Fallon, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he lives where I live right now. Yeah. We've been, BP and I, we met on the Stiff Tour in 1980, and he was the publicist for Stiff Records, too, and I was with him the day that John Bonham died, and he was, because he'd been the publicist for those guys, and he was really upset, and we stayed in touch, and I didn't see him for a few years. All of a sudden, he showed back up in 92 or 91 in Austin off the U2 tour, right?
When
U2 stopped doing their Oshtung Baby tour.
Yeah.
He showed up and ended up living at my house for 6 months.
Wow.
And then he did a U2 book at my house. And so those guys were all calling the house all the time working on this book. And then ever since then, we've just been on and off. He stays where I stay here in Austin, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He and I write together too and do stuff. And yeah, BP's my soulmate forever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had him on the show and he had done some stuff with Clem too.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing with BP, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm the rhythm guitar player.
Oh, awesome.
And me and James, you know? And we had Mike Mills playing bass.
Awesome.
And Clem playing drums.
Wow. That's a great band.
And then Annie Marie Lewis, and then James B. Harvey playing, and then BP Fallon. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that comes around. Yeah, that's what he got, a great band, you know?
Yeah, it's a cool band to be in. Yeah, I'll definitely come back for
and
that.
And then we had, another time we had, is it Dominique?
Dominique, yeah.
She's a good bass player, too.
Yeah, she's great. I've got her picture on my wall there.
Yeah, no, she's good. So, yeah, so, no, I like playing BP. I like being a sideman, too. That's fun.
Have you gotten to do that a lot?
Sometimes I do it in Mexico, yeah.
Yeah.
In Mexico, when I first went to Mexico, they didn't know who Joe King Carrasco was.
Yeah.
And there's a band there that played my stuff, but I was playing in a place. I mean, it was tough, man. I was playing, you know, it's like being on Bourbon Street. You know, it's like party scene, real hardcore. And I mean, Bourbon Street's one thing, Vallarta's a whole nother thing. It makes Bourbon Street look like kindergarten. It's way more intense.
Whoa.
Way more intense. I mean, the bars that are out in Vallarta were lit now at 10:30, 12 in the morning, at 10:30 in the morning, 11:30 in the morning, you know. I mean, anything goes, anything, and then the drug war happened to kind of clamp down. But at that time, you know, I started playing at 11:30 at night till 4:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was like I had to learn, like, you know, cover songs and the whole works and the whole things. I was nobody, you know, and I sort of built myself up and gained a reputation there. It was like starting over again here in Austin, you know. Except it was Mexico, and then we started the Nacho Daddy in 2009. But I got there in 2006.
Okay,
and it was, you know, it was an interesting time. I had a little apartment and kind of I thought I was going to be there 3 weeks, and then 3 weeks turned 3 months, and 3 years, and then all of a sudden 10 years. You know,
you just love the culture.
Yeah, I do, and it was great weather, and it was just, you know, it was nice, you know, you're in Austin, it was nice to take a break and try a different groove, you know, and
plus
I like the beach, I like the waves, you know, and going out, and I have property up in the mountains above Vallarta, about an hour and a half, where it goes 7,000 feet up.
Oh, wow.
It's up in the mountains, like being in Colorado, and so you can be up freezing you're one moment and body surfing an hour later and burning up, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, and so it's like the best of both worlds, and you know, and plus, you know, like on the CD, I grab a lot of slang, you know, I play with Mexican musicians, I play with Cuban musicians, a lot of the guys I play with are Cuban.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so you're just always picking up slang, and And yeah, one of the, you know, so that's how I find the words to the songs. I'm always, I'm listening.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. There's a place there called the Bodeguita del Medio, which is a Cuban place. Uh-huh. And so they bring in these bands from Cuba, and they're supposed to stay for 3 months, right? Or 6 months. And they're great bands. I mean, these guys are like trained really incredible yeah. bands. And so what happens is those guys get there and they're so popular, they fall in love with Mexican girls and they don't want to go back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that's, and so there's a whole Cuban community there. And at one time, you know, I was bringing the instruments here from Austin, from Straight Music down to Mexico to give them, supplying the Cubans with
their
instruments. And my trumpet player is Ornelio. He's from Havana. And then my drummer is from Cuba also, you know. So, yeah, so they're great musicians.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the drummer that I had was Captain, we call him Morgan. He's Morgan, but he's all black. But he served in Angola for 3 years, you know, in the military. And he's interesting guys, you know. And yeah. the Cuban Spanish, most of the Mexicans can't even understand the Cubans.
No.
Can you speak Spanish? Sí. You understand Cuban Spanish?
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Cool. That's the Spanish I speak. Can I tell you something that'll make you laugh? I lived in Mexico when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And my family came in 1960 when Castro took over. And my grandmother, you know, since she had a Spanish accent when she spoke English, people would ask if she was Mexican. And yeah. you know how like all Spanish yeah. people, yeah. they're like, no, it's us and the Spaniards. Everyone else is below us. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I lived in Mexico. And when I came back, I think I was like 5, but I went to say something, and I said it with a Mexican accent, and my grandma was like, you stop that.
Oh, wow. You
talk like a Cuban.
Where'd you live in Mexico?
In Fortín de las Flores in Veracruz, in between wow. Orizaba and Cordoba.
Oh, that's beautiful there.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever been back?
I haven't been back since I was in my 20s.
Yeah, Fortín de las Flores, a real beautiful place.
Yeah, gorgeous yeah. place.
I could live there.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. You know, my brother married a Cuban girl, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so in the 90s, 1986, I played the wedding in Havana. You know?
Oh, wow. So you've been there?
Oh, yeah. I played and I rented an apartment on the Malecón, and I played with the Cuban musicians there, and those guys are like, man, that's incredible, man.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, between the A and E chords, they get 6 chords, you know? It's like, God, at least, you know, Cuba's a beautiful place. Now that it's going to open up, I'm just going, wow, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because it was totally then untouched, you know.
Right.
Now you're going to see Starbucks and McDonald's.
Do you have that in Puerto Vallarta?
Oh, yeah, there's like 5 Starbucks there and there's a McDonald's, you know. Once you get out of Vallarta, it just, you know, there's nothing, you know.
Yeah.
Vallarta is kind of like being in Vegas to a degree. Parts of it, you know.
I understand that.
There's 150 probably hotels, each 2 bands in each hotel, figure 300 bands.
Wow.
That's a lot of bands, you know. And there's no music stores there, really. And all the musicians in Mexico gravitate toward, you know, Vallarta just to work, right? And a lot yeah. of good jazz musicians, too. And I play with a bass player named Steve York. He used to play with Manfred Mann.
Uh-huh.
He did that wow. song. Then he did that song called Gloria. Gloria, he did that, and uh-huh. he knows like everything in the old English scene. You know, he hung out with Jack Bruce and stuff like that. So he and I play together too. So that's cool playing with him.
Yeah,
and then the keyboard player from Santana lives there too. You know, and a lot of good musicians come down there and hang out. Even Emmy Lou Harris was hanging out down there, and it's people like that.
Wow. Know?
Yeah, so it's an interesting scene. A lot of musicians pass through.
That's yeah. amazing.
One time I was getting gas at the Pemex near my house, and there's a big ship there. I looked up on stage. It was Robert Cray on the Blues Cruise. And I'm like, wow, yeah.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
yeah, I wish yeah. I'd been on a Blues Cruise.
Yeah.
Maybe this CD, because it's got R&B, we'll get on a Blues Cruise.
Yeah, maybe the Blues Cruise people will listen to
it. Have you heard the last song?
Yeah,
Ain't
I
No
did.
Touch.
I heard them all, yeah.
Yeah, Ain't No Touch is a cool song.
Yeah, they're all great songs, man.
That's my favorite song.
That is?
Well, that and Oaxaca. I like Oaxaca. Oaxaca means it's what's up.
How does that mean?
It means like, hey, man, Oaxaca.
Oh, I know that.
It means like, you know, hey, Oaxaca. And they go, it means like, what's up? Like, what's up? Oaxaca, what's up?
Yeah.
You
know? That's weird.
Yeah.
I remember spending time there when I was a kid in Mitla.
Oh, Oaxaca. Yeah, Mitla's cool.
That's a cool town.
What are you doing in Mitla?
My mom and her then husband collected bromeliads.
Wow, bromeliads. Wow, cool.
Yeah, and they'd bring them back and sell them at plant shows.
Really?
Yeah. It was the 70s, man.
Yeah, that had a lot of friends that collected bromeliads. That's a big deal. Yeah, yeah, it's interesting.
That's wild.
I wonder if they know the same people.
Do you know a guy named Michael Hughes?
I don't know if I do.
He used to live here for a long time in the 90s.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I knew a lot of people that collected bromeliads, and they still do. It's bromeliads. Did you ever get into bromeliads or not?
I mean, no, I was a little kid.
Did you ever get into orchids? Or like, there's always orchid societies.
No, orchids are bromeliads, right?
I guess. Because
a bromeliad is a kind of plant that feeds off of the moisture in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of expats in Vallarta, you know, and people who've run from the States.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of these old ladies are like, you know, are into bromeliads. There's a friend of mine named Barbara Sands who passed away a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. And she wrote for the paper there, and she was a big fan. So the paper there, she always had articles. But she collected bromeliads. And anyway, she, at 20 years old, lived with Clint Eastwood and his wife.
Wow.
You know, and she had all these photos, you know, back in the 50s with Clint Eastwood. And then when he did The Good, the Bad, and Ugly, she was with him in Spain. So she was always photographing it, right, on photos. And this last year she passed away, and I was like one of her closest friends. Her family came down. They didn't want anything. So they put it all in my house this last year. All her stuff.
Wow.
She collected for 50 years, antiques and all this stuff. And so I've got these about 10,000 photos that she took through the last 50 years of, you know, the Clint Eastwood thing.
That is awesome.
I know. And I got to go get that stuff. And it's like, yeah. And even Clint Eastwood's wife called me up and wanted it, you know. So I'm going, okay.
Wow.
But yeah, but she was a cool lady. And she was, you know, and you know, 50, 60 years ago, she looked stunningly beautiful. And she was 82 when she died. But she was a really interesting lady. And you know, there's some crazy party ladies that went down to Mexico and never came back.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, no, it's and there's also some people probably outlaws too. You know, people wanted
people going there and getting lost.
Yeah, there's people are running from the heat. You know,
yeah.
And so it's a cool place to be. It's heavy, man. You know, but it's had a big impact on my riding, and I've got to go back down and switch places. Actually, my house where I live right now, actually I gotta go pay my water bill today.
Oh, really?
Down there. but the funny thing is that you know, I still keep going back and forth, and we sell the Mexican bags I do out of Mexico. We get all the shirts made there and stuff, and you know, but despite everything that's going on, I keep doing it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad that you're hey, let me ask you a question. Did you really live in Nicaragua in the 80s?
Yeah. Well, I went to school there. I went to a language school there. Yeah.
Okay. The way it's written in like Wikipedia or something, it's almost like you went there. Like I was like, wow, that was like a bad place to go in the 80s.
Well, I went there and I went to a school there, and I talked to them into having a field trip to the front, you know, and stuff like that.
Really?
And yeah. I went to the coast there. And now my brother's been living there for 10 years, 12 years. He lives in Nicaragua.
Wow.
Yeah. I was on the phone with him before I got here. And yeah, it was back then. It was the Sandinista thing.
Yeah.
I went to a Sandinista school, and
you did,
yeah. And it was you know, it was a really cool experience, and that was musically, that was cool too. You know, you got to keep, you know, finding things to, you know, keep the brain going, you know, and try to keep moving, and
yeah,
you know, or musically and explore, you know, keep it fresh. And I even hung out in Colombia. One of my best friends lives in Bogota, and he puts on a lot of festivals. He has a TV show there, and we write together, and his name's Camilo Pombo. And he managed a guy named Cabas for a while. I don't know if you ever Cabas, but Camilo's a great man. When we write together, it's really cool.
That's good.
Yeah, so I have to go to Bogota to work with him, you know?
Nice. What do you do with that material?
We're going to start, I think the Camilo song, it's coming up the next album, you know?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it's like... So, yeah, you know, and I write with my friend, a drummer in Mexico, too. I collaborate with him, Luis, and he's from Chihuahua.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's Spanglish, you know, everybody's...
Yeah.
In Vallarta, there's so many gringos that all the cab drivers are speaking Spanglish now, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
And I bet they'll be in Cuba pretty soon, too, you know?
Yeah, totally. I bet they will be.
So you haven't been back to Cuba?
I've never been there.
Yeah, you should go.
No, I was born here.
Really? You were born in Cuba?
No, I was born here.
Yeah, you should go to Cuba and check it out, man. It's really beautiful, man. The Cuban people are really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. In Vallarta, I've noticed that the Cubans and the Mexicans, with the Mexican musicians, there's like a little friction there, you know,
because
they think that the Cubans are trying to take their jobs, the musicians are, you know,
right.
coming in and and the Cubans have seem to have more of a educated way about them, you know?
Right.
Does that make sense? Or
yeah. No, I mean, I wonder if that the education system there and like the medical system is really good, like they say.
It is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're real sophisticated. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, seeing these guys coming out of Havana get into the Bodeguita and they go, whoa.
Yeah.
And all these beautiful women everywhere. They don't want to go back. You
yeah,
know?
I bet
you
they
know,
don't.
You know? No, they don't.
And there's all these turistas, Americanas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Cuba develops. But the thing that when they open up Cuba, it's going to hurt Cancun. It's going to hurt Vallarta. Oh, totally. It's going to, because all these people have been going to the same resorts all these years, you know,
yeah.
are going to want to see Cuba, and so it's going to change the field, the playing field for a lot of resorts or those areas, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah, it's already affected. People are going, wait a minute, man. Now instead of they're going to Cancun, they're going to be going to Havana. You know,
it's essentially the same ocean, right?
Yeah,
and I mean it's not that far from
but
Cancun.
It's a lot
to
more.
Cuba.
It's a lot different and a whole different culture, but it's still Latin. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different food.
Yeah, and I've you know I still take guitar lessons. I study all kinds of different guitars. I've got a guitar guy in Mexico that he's Cuban. We're going to start studying son music, which is Cuban uh-huh. style. And,
yeah,
and you know just to learn, you know.
Yeah, you've had some songs covered like by Texas Tornadoes and even Manu Chao.
Yeah.
Do you write for other people?
Well, I mean, I write my stuff and somebody covers it.
And then somebody covers it,
Yeah. I was really surprised Manu Chao did it. And he's like a big fan. You knew Manu Chao,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course.
And he's a great guy. And I was just, man, when he played here in Austin, I was like, man, he treated me really nice. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
And he's a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
I somehow back in the 90s or 80s, they said I turned a tour down with Manu Chao. And I go, oh, I did? It had to be the management that did it or something, you know? But yeah, I mean, he's huge, man.
He is huge.
Yeah.
And very inventive, man. He's always doing something new. I love listening to his records.
It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. He told me he was going to go into cumbia, you know, which is...
Right.
I didn't do any cumbia on this new one, but I do a lot of cumbia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. It's hard not to, like, once you can learn, like, once you can master that rhythm enough to play it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I you know, it's weird, you know, when I'm playing, we'll do, like, a kind of a Tex-Mex vamp thing, Tornadoes kind of thing or whatever,
right.
and then I go into polkas, and then I do a lot of cha-cha, because I play the Cuban guys, because we're doing a lot, they do right. cha-cha's Cuban, right, and so we're doing a lot of cha-cha, then we're in cumbia, then I go into Chuck Berry, then, you know, then I go into triplets. I do a lot of different styles, you know.
Do you ever do solo shows like a?
Yeah, I'm going to do a songwriter thing on Saturday night with Augie Myers where I do five songs. But yeah, I'd like to start doing acoustic.
Yeah,
I can do it. In fact, and when it's slow time in Vallarta, when they can't afford to pay the guys, I'm doing it by myself.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Yeah, they have in Vallarta. It's weird. They have a high season, low season. High season is November through April. And,
right.
You know, it's people, and it doesn't really pick up till December or January through March. Right. That's and then all of a sudden they're gone. It's like there's the place is empty and you can, and so I'm, you know, it's very humbling to play for nobody.
Yeah.
And I've done that.
Even there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. There's, you know, there's nobody, there's no tourists. You're playing the bar and, but you keep playing because you're working at the bar. So it's like, hey, it's like
this
the waiters.
This is what I do.
Yeah. This is what you do, right? Yeah. So you're just playing the tables. And I still do the same show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You love, yeah. You know, I did a show with you once at 40 Acres Fest on UT campus.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like the afternoon or some shit, and you were like climbing stuff and like all over the place. I was just like, God, what?
I still do it.
You do?
I still bounce a guitar. I bounce a guitar on my head, and I'll do all this stuff. I still, you know, still run around. I mean, it's the whole key is you know, you get. I still go out in the audience. I still go out and do this, you know, a real crazy show, and I get in the audience. We did our show this last weekend in Terlingua, Viva Terlingua, and we headlined, and I get off and go in the audience and get up on the bar and bounce a guitar on my head and do all this.
Still there, man.
Yeah, I try to. Yeah.
What do you do when you're not? Playing shows to stay in shape, because you can't, I mean, I can't, I have to exercise all the time, or I can't really sing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really sing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, last year in Mexico, I was going to the gym every day. This, when I'm here, I've been pretty busy. I go out to my house on land on work and do stuff, but, or just, you know, I have dogs, man. The dogs keep you in shape. And, I probably should exercise more. You know, I almost got to walk on stage. Well, I guess it's time. Hit that switch.
Yeah. So you guys are finishing up kind of doing a tour for this album, and you're going to end up going to Tucson and Bisbee. You're going to be playing Club Congress. I love that place.
Yeah. We're next Wednesday, we play Taos Thursday.
Yeah.
And then we play Bisbee on Saturday and Tucson on Sunday, and then zip back to Austin, man. We just drove straight back from San Diego about a week ago. Man. And, you know, that's the interesting thing. People say, all these bands are on the road, but they don't see the other side. They don't see when you're 5 miles out of Austin, you're in climbing, going out in 290, and your van's overheating, and you're seeing your the lights, the transmission red light come on. You're just going out on the road. You're going, oh, no. And you're going, what do we do? Do we turn around and go back and get another vehicle, which is what we did last weekend, right?
Right.
And then we were up in Colorado, and we overheated going over to Laramie, and so I had to get a water pump put in. And I drove 16 hours that day to get us to Idaho, to Boise, and then we overheated coming in down into Oregon to our gig in Medford, and I was just going, oh, got a van fixed there, and then we went from Santa Cruz to L.A. in one day. So we're coming in L.A. You know L.A., right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're on five in five climbs, and I'd been driving all day, so I gave the van to Vince, the drummer, and all of a sudden he says, red lights are coming on. And so we're at the top of the pass coming into LA, right? And the van, it's really hot too, man. And it's like big semis, you know, and we're there and we're overheating. And we have a gig come early gig in LA, you know, on a Sunday afternoon. And this California High Patrol pulls up. You okay? I says, yeah, I think so. You know, and I let it cool down, and I got back in the van and coasted into LA, and then we played our gig in San Diego, and it got out of San Diego at 3:30 in the morning, and I coming out of San Diego on I-8 or whatever road it was, and all of a sudden the transmission heat light comes on. I'm going, ugh. And so you pull over at 3:30 in the morning on the side of the highway, and people don't see that, you know, and that's some of the guys in the band, they're just oblivious to it, but you know, it's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
You've been broke down, right?
Dude.
Yeah.
In those same passes in the Colorado, I remember a tour in Colorado.
Yeah.
Where I had a drummer that is the first time when something went wrong, you know, like the van's over here, something's going wrong, people are kind of sleeping in the back of the van, and then all of a sudden it dies, and you pull over, and one guy's like, oh, what happened? We're like, oh, we broke down, and then the drummer sits up and goes, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, what do? You know, I've been broke down so many times. I get you don't freak out, but
no.
You always want to make the gig. You do anything to make the gig.
And you almost always do. That's what I've noticed. I've only missed a couple gigs in my life.
I missed two times. I missed one time we got snowed in Klein's Corner in off I-40 trying to do an Albuquerque gig, and we couldn't. Mm-hmm. We had to park the bus and just sit there, and we missed a gig at El Rey Theater in Albuquerque. And another time we missed the 9:30 club in Washington, D.C. Our bus broke down in the Bronx. New York. I climbed the buses on the side of the road. I climbed out, you know, off the freeway. It looked like a bombed out, you know, place, you know.
Yeah, was it in the 80s?
Yeah. I mean, it was the Bronx. But that's the only two times that that's happened.
Do you get up there and play anymore in New York?
I'd like to. I haven't played lately. You know, we mostly do in the West Coast. You know? Yeah.
I read a nice thing that, why am I drawing a blank on his name? I like him. We're friends. Rob Patterson wrote it.
Oh, yeah. No, Rob Patterson is a good friend of mine.
I guess he lived in New York when you were going up there and playing at the Lone Star Cafe.
Yeah, and I haven't seen Rob in a while, but one time Rob and I were on a plane together flying back in Austin, and Chuck Berry was there, and I came to Chuck Berry, and I said, oh, man, you're the greatest, you're the best. He just kind of passed me, you know? But I love Chuck Berry, man. He says, I mean, you know, Chuck Berry is amazing. I've opened for him a couple of times. I've opened for Fats Domino. I've opened for Little Richard a few times, you know, and Chuck Berry's just like, guy, he opens up his guitar, goes out there and picks up that band and plays, and 20 minutes, boom, he's gone, you know?
Yeah.
And he's amazing. Playing with Little Richard was pretty cool, too.
You played with, you opened for me. Yeah,
yeah, I played him a few, couple of
what
times.
What was that like?
Great. I got to hang out with him, you know, and he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys are the kings of rock and roll. I got to hang out with Jimmy Reed, you know, and I got to see Bo Diddley a few times. It's just, golly, you know, and seeing Jerry Lee. And, you know, I there's a magazine I read a lot. It's called Vintage Rock. It's out of England. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I read that like, man, it's like, I read it like Teen Beat, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those English magazines always seem to be a little...
Yeah, they appreciate American rock and roll more. And so I think that this record is also comes from more of a rockabilly way or something, more R&B way. But yeah, I think, you know, with more of Spanglish lyrics.
Yeah. Yeah, with you. I mean, you know.
If Tango Muchachita is like, I got a woman, you know, so it's just like it's different, you know. But and so I just try to take, you know, a phrase in English and put it in Spanish, and that's what I do.
Yeah. I think that's a great, my grandmother does it daily on the phone when I'm talking to her.
Is she from Cuba, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I should send you some of the stuff that she says.
Yeah, no, so I collect, you know, I study Spanish a lot. You know, I study Spanish slang. I keep going to school on that too, and I have friends of mine. And I collect, you know, slang books in Spanish.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, and so that's what I'm always looking for. So we got a new one. It's probably be on the next CD. It's called Quemando las Patas del Diablo.
Okay.
That means burning the feet of the devil, which is smoking weed.
Oh, okay.
It's about Colorado, yeah.
I like your Who Put the P in Pendejo.
Yeah.
The P in Pendejo.
That comes from, I live with this girl from Tulancingo, and she's from Mexico City, and her mother's, they're from actually Culiacan. And she really, it was a disaster, but I actually got a lot of songs out of that disaster. And I was going back and forth like every few weeks from Vallarta to Mexico City, you know, anywhere I could.
Yeah.
And it's over to Tulancingo. And I was a very much of a pendejo. And I admit it, you know.
Yeah. But you're in the song.
Yeah. Everybody's been a pendejo once.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's what that's about.
Also, sometimes it depends on how you're looking at something, if someone's a pendejo or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From what angle you're looking.
Yeah. Well, I was pendejo from all angles. I thought, what am I doing? You know, I'm driving at 4 a.m. to Tulancingo, you know?
Yeah.
And I get there, oh, my God. But it was interesting because actually Tulancingo's not that far from where you're talking about the...
14?
Yeah, 14. Yeah. It's about 3 or 4 hours, you know?
Yeah.
Beautiful, but I was just like, what am I doing, you know?
Yeah. Women, man.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about. Mostly everything on there is about women.
Yeah, well... Hey, they're the inspiration.
Yeah, yeah, you have to have women inspire you, and they always have. And when I first started writing with JP, my first from the quintet, it was in Hollywood. We were inspired by women.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it work.
Usually, what made us pick up a guitar and start playing.
That's right.
With me, at least.
With me, yeah. I saw the Beatles, went wow, yeah, and you know, and so later on though, I keep playing my guitar, and my guitar is like my best friend, and if I get married again, I'll probably be to one of my guitars.
Yeah.
I just don't know which one.
Well, you can't have that Telecaster, because that's the one I'm going to marry.
Yeah, that's a very cool Telecaster. I collect Telecasters, too.
You?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a lot of guitars?
Yeah, I got a 57, a 59, and a 60.
Oh, yeah. Those are nice.
Yeah, but I don't plan to take them out anymore, And in fact, one of the Telecasters I have is one that Harry Hess had from the Tornadoes, or from the Quintet, and I bought it from him in the 80s sometime. At this house, I was living in L.A. It was J.P., Johnny Pettis, and it was Harry Hess who played guitar, Doug, and steel guitar, and then Doug, and then me. We had four of us living in this apartment.
Wow.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that none of those guys are alive today. It's only me and Bruno. But it was it was an interesting scene, and being with JP.
Well, you're younger than them, right?
What's that?
You're younger than Doug.
Oh, yeah. But living with JP, every day we come out, and JP played with the quintet. After the quintet got busted, he never came back to Texas.
Oh, okay.
And so, but every day we come out, we see the big Hollywood sign. He says, Joe, today we got to make it, you know. Okay. So, Yeah, and being in L.A. back then in the 70s and 80s was like, there was Ron Overman, Ron Overman can recognize a hit, you know, okay, how can you recognize a hit? You know, I was like, God, it's back in the 45 days, you know, yeah, the 45s, yeah. And it was an interesting time. And back to Chileando, the sound that we're trying, that Rick was going for in Chileando was a real 70s sound. If you listen Anytime You Need Me, it sounds like the Rolling Stones 1969 or something. And then Tequila Revolution's got that,
that's a great song too.
You know, it got that real 70s kind of disco kind of pre-sound, you know. And so that's what sound he was kind of going for on it, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of a 70s kind of just real raw sound.
Well, people should get out there and get it. They can find you at joeking.com. The record is available at all places online that you have. CD Baby is a good place to go look, you think?
Yeah, CD Baby's
cool. Well, definitely just go to joeking.com because there's tons of stuff. And then you can also get involved with vivaperros.org. Yeah. There's a way to get involved there.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I'm missing before they start?
Mowing the grass. No, they're kids have been mower, but he just went past. Yeah. Well, what we miss is that I need to get my lawnmower repaired, but I can't find a good lawnmower repair guy.
Do they have those anymore?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. I have two lawnmowers at my house in Atlanta. And I weed eat. I do all the work out there at my
house.
That's good. And then in Mexico, I have a whole collection of plants. I'm the only guy who drags around his palm trees, okay?
Well, they're expensive.
Yeah, I have a palm tree that I had from a little baby when I was like six. Here comes a lawnmower again.
He's just sitting right outside the window.
I had a palm tree that was like, you know, I got it at, you know, 12 inches high, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's like 30 feet high.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long does that take?
About 7-8 years.
Wow.
And I want to take it with me when I move out of my house, but I just, everybody's going, you can't take your palm tree now, it's too big.
Yeah.
You know? But I'd like to take my palm tree. It's like my pet, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's your friend.
But I have some different plants I'm going to take with me, you know. And then it's weird, my property up at the 7,000 feet, what grows at sea level doesn't grow at 7,000 feet.
Right.
So that's another dilemma I'm having.
Yeah, palm tree wouldn't grow there.
Yeah, but you know, and the property I have up at 7,000 feet, it's next to a tequila plantation.
Uh-huh.
There's coffee up there. It's beautiful. It's
called
San Sebastian. It was built in 1600. It's very, you know, it's most of the houses are built there in 300-400 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a cool place, man.
Hey, can I ask you a question? This is going to be a good informative question for those that live in Austin. When you go to get Mexican food here, where do you go? Like, what's your go-to?
What's the place? Hecho, Mexico, I like.
Okay.
That's a cool place. I like, you know, Fine San Miguel's like really good. I've been here my whole life. And then I go to Charlie Sexton's ex-wife? What's it? Mahdi's is good, you know?
Mahdi's
I like
good.
Them all.
Yeah.
You know, but there's no place like that I get the Mexican thing, you know, like in Mexico. There's a few places in East Austin. I'm a vegetarian, so I got to sit there and watch what they put in the beans and stuff like that or what they put in the rice and stuff. But a lot of places, Austin's good about that they, you know, they don't put a lot of meat in the stuff.
Yeah, Austin's an easy place to be a vegetarian. I imagine much easier than Puerto Vallarta.
They have vegetarian restaurants in Vallarta. It's really interesting seeing old vegetarians in Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different thing. It's really cool. I go to a vegetarian place there, and it's really interesting, the different people, you know, that you normally see.
Yeah.
And it's you can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's vegetarian restaurants in Guadalajara, and you have to work at it. You know, as long as they got tortillas and beans, I'm good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you look healthy for somebody that's... How long have you been a vegetarian? A long time. I saw you in an interview saying you were.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped. I kind of went on and off, but about 3 years now, I'm back, you know, down there. I was eating some... And I lived next to a taco stand. It was really good. Then I said, I need to stop, you know, and get back. And now, if I could just cut out sugar, I'd really have it nailed, you know?
That's hard.
Yeah, but I can do it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, man, they got some great, you know. I mean, I still eat some fish. There's a place there called Memo's Tacos down on Basilio Badillo. And if I was on death row and they said I had one last meal to eat, that'd probably be where I would eat Memo's Tacos. Okay. He's got this shrimp taco that's just to die for, you know.
Nice. Yeah.
Then I like Thundercloud subs too. Anyway,
of course, who doesn't?
Yeah,
I enjoy the Veggie Delight.
Yeah, Veggie Delight's good. Yeah. You know, with cream cheese on it.
Yeah,
man. Are you vegetarian?
No,
but you like the veg. Yeah,
Yeah, I like the Veggie Delight sandwich.
You know, another friend of mine that that has a house there, her name's Catherine Hardwick.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of her? Uh-uh. She booked me back in 79, 80, and she used to ride around in West Campus with flowers in her hair and birds in her hair. She was a real cool hippie girl, right?
Yeah.
And then she went on to Hollywood as a designer, right? And
really?
Then she ended up doing Dogtown, Boys of Dogtown.
Oh, yeah.
And she directed that, and then she directed the first Twilight and wrote the first Twilight.
Wow.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she's a cool, awesome lady, and then she's got a house in Sayulita, and I hadn't seen her for a couple of years, but she's a, you know, she's a film director, and
yeah,
she's another person that came out of Austin, now the same thing I did, you know?
Wow, that's...
Catherine Hardwick,
yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, she's a real, and she's a vegetarian, too, that's why but she's gone all the world, she's managed to, and she's, you know, she's older, and she still looks great.
You look great.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad that we got to do this. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Ray.
Ray, the video.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the last. I was like, I know there was one other time I hung out with you.
Yeah. Ray, you did. He did your video, right? Or something?
It never got finished.
Oh, okay.
But I always was happy, like, even though it wasn't, I was like, at least I got to hang out with Joaquin Carrasco.
At the house up there. Yeah, that was a cool house. Yeah. Now, Ray, I think we moved to Oklahoma and I haven't seen him, but yeah. Ray's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Z-Ray.
Yeah, Z-Ray.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah, you know, Ray was interesting. He was the guy, first guy to get us to, we played Columbia
back in
83, you know, and then we...
Jesus, that must have been an interesting time to play in Columbia.
Man. Yeah, you know, Columbia in 83, it was, you know, and that's how I met my friend Camilo, you know, and yeah, I love Columbia, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And my brother just lived there for like 6 months doing a job there.
Where?
In Bogota.
Bogota's a great place, man. I intend on going back, you know? Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah. Viva Bogota!
Okay. Well, man, thank you so much for doing the show. Everyone needs to get out and pick up Chileando. Once again, you can get it here in Austin at Waterloo and probably Antone's Records and places where records are sold. But, of course, on the internet is where people get most of their stuff. You can find it by going to joeking.com. I'm sure it's on iTunes and at CD Baby.
Perfect.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Perfecto. Ow! My ding-dong
daddy, don't daddy no no more. Joaquin Carrasco from his great new album, Chileando, produced by the great Rick Castillo. You can find it at joeking.com on iTunes and find it physically in Austin at Waterloo and at Antone's Records. Do what you got to do to get involved with Joaquin Carrasco. Great conversation with him. He's a great dude living down in Puerto Vallarta, living the dream. Don't forget that you can give to his vivaperros.org, which is his homeless dog nonprofit, which he has going on. Get out there and give to it, all right? Joaquin Carrasco, what a great artist, legend, a legend. You know, he's in the Texas Music Hall of Fame. He's out there. He's still doing it, still making music, still rocking. I love him, all right? Joaquin Carrasco, let's do it. Hey, guys, while you're out there picking up the new Chileando album by Joaquin Carrasco, don't forget that you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And if you want to get really involved, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am Johnny Gowdy, okay? At Johnny Gowdy is the thing. I am Johnny Gowdy. At Johnny Gowdy is where you can find me on there, all right? Hey, I'd like to thank Joe for coming by, sitting down, taking the time. I want to thank my friend Joe Ray for setting it up. Joe Ray DeMeno, great lady, love her. Thank you, Joe Ray. All right, let's hear some more music from Joe King from his album Chileando. We're going to find out who put the P in Pendejo. This is Joe King Carrasco from his album Chileando. Let's get down. Have a great week, guys. Fell in love with La Diablo. I drove all night. I thought it was love. Now I'm all alone. Doing a single road. No Valle Madre. The way she lied to me. I did not know she was shaking Sancho.
chain. You did a number on me. You threw my business away. Me robaste. Yo soy el rey. Pendejote. What I eat.